Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 15th of July. Monday at 1 means All Things Political. And we'll be devoting the first half of All Things Political today to the George Zimmerman verdict, which brings to mind and heart so many issues: the racial divide in the country, the use of firearms, the justice system, standing your ground. Eric Vaughn will be joining us momentarily. Eric is a longtime Milwaukee journalist and former talk show host on Milwaukee's WMCS until the station recently changed format. He and his wife have launched a major initiative, Brain, Brawn, and Body, which is dedicated to the health and wellness of African-American men. Later in this hour, Tim Murphy will join us, reporter for the Washington, D.C. Bureau of Mother Jones, and he has written extensively about a lot of issues. We'll be interested in what's happening in Congress or what isn't happening in Congress concerning the Farm Bill, stripping out the food program. There is movement in the Senate toward imposing historic limits on how the filibuster can be used. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the presidential race, what's going on in Texas, in other states in the country where conservative legislation, particularly relating to abortion, has been enacted. And, is that enough to deal with this hour? I think so. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I guess the question of the first half hour is whether or not you feel unsettled by the Zimmerman verdict, or if you feel that justice was served. It brings to mind so many different questions. We will be opening phones for you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, if you would like to leave messages there, you're certainly welcome to do that. And that is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Good afternoon, Eric Vaughn.
Good afternoon, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks so much for being with us, sir.
Thanks for having me.
You're a person I thought of because I know you will have a thoughtful response to this. There is something deeply unsettling about this verdict, isn't there?
There's something deeply unsettling about the whole situation. I mean, if we go back to the very beginning when it was reported that Trayvon Martin was killed, I think people have been unsettled is probably the most polite way to put this, since the outset. And this only, I think, heightens that.
Let's have you respond to some of the news of today. As you heard during the news, Eric Holder, Attorney General, said the killing was a tragic, unnecessary shooting. It provides an opportunity for the nation to speak honestly about complicated and emotionally charged issues. When he talks about speaking honestly about all of these issues, what do you see as the issues, Eric? And we've talked before about having an honest discussion about some of these issues, and somehow it's never quite forthcoming.
You're right. And Kathleen, you know, you and I have had these discussions time and time again as colleagues working together on that TV show.
Right.
And we have watched people back and forth on the issue of race. I was saying earlier today that even those who suggest that we have reached, a better place racially in this country since the election of Barack Obama, I think have overstated that issue. We've never really had an honest discussion on race, and I don't know how you have one. I think one of the most honest comments that I've heard, and I've tried to figure out why people have been so angry with the fact that he said, because I think he is speaking the truth, and those came from Geraldo Rivera. As ridiculous as some may think his comments were, I think his reflections on the jurors that decided the fate of George Zimmerman were pretty accurate. Those six women probably would have done the same thing that George Zimmerman did. There's a fear in this country of black men. There's a fear in this country of black men in hoodies, particularly, and young black men also are feared. And you put all three of those things together, you have this kind of knee-jerk reaction to the presence of African-American men in any setting, and it's hard to tell just what might happen. I know I feel it oftentimes. I'm 55 years old, and I'm often worried about what people's perception will be of me and how they will respond to me when I show up in a particular place.
Mm. And did you feel that way when you were 17 years old, and has it stayed with you pretty much the same all those years hence, Eric?
You know, I can't honestly say I did at 17, but certainly as I grew older and I was more aware of public perceptions of race and the realities of race. I grew up in Washington, D.C., where the majority of people living there, at least when I was growing up and through much of my life, has been African-American. So we didn't have the kind of racial tension in the city when I was growing up that you have in many other places in this country. So I was kind of spared of that as a younger person. But when I came to Wisconsin, and particularly when I moved into Milwaukee, racial issues became much more prevalent to me. And I think that so many things in this community are race-based, and the discussion hovers around race all the time, that I'm far more aware and cognizant of those things relative to race than I ever was in my life. And so you kind of view things through a different lens based on where you live, based on the times. And I think even as a national movement, we're starting to see that there is this intolerance, maybe is the best way I can describe it, an intolerance for those things that were once seen in this country as being unfair and unjust, particularly directed toward African Americans. They are now being, people are now retaliating against those things, or at least against the people who fought for those things, and they think that it's their time now to be treated differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that we've ever really set the balance straight on any of this racial injustice and difference or racial injustice that exists in the country.
Were you heartened, and do you think that this furthers a conversation about all that we need to deal with, issues of race, issues of stand your ground, issues of guns, et cetera, for the Justice Department to say they are going to restart their investigation into this shooting, or does that just make a lot of people mad and does no good?
Well, I think that it all depends on the outcome. I mean, the effort to go in and investigate and for the Justice Department to get involved without an outcome that satisfies those people who say that there was that justice was not served by this recent finding in the Zimmerman case, I think will only stir more unrest and distrust of, quote, the system. So how the Justice Department's investigation and their actions resolve themselves will have everything to do with whether or not this makes a difference. I don't think if they go in and they come away from this case and they're not able to, you know, find some culpability on the part of George Zimmerman for the death of Trayvon Martin, there will be considerable unrest and disease in this country related to the justice system.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I found really, there are so many levels of being disturbed by this case, but this movement on the part of George Zimmerman's brother and others who think that somehow Trayvon Martin was a perpetrator in all of this, that this 17-year-old who really was unarmed, who was walking home from a store, who should have been able to go home, wound up dead, and he's been turned into a perpetrator in some way here that I'm sure must just sicken his family.
Well, his family and many of the other people, including myself, who've watched this case from the beginning, I as I said, this thing was bad from the word go. And the saddest part of it all is that there's only one true witness to all of this, and mm-hmm. that's George Zimmerman.
Right.
So who knows really what happened? Obviously, he's not going to say anything to incriminate himself. He never did throughout the trial or throughout this whole year that we've been waiting for the trial and going through the trial process. The only story that we were able to hear was his story and his side of things. And for most people, particularly those who Trayvon Martin, his parents and other family members and friends, who described him as, you know, not the kind of young boy that George Zimmerman and his supporters have had you believe he was. Sure, there has to be unrest with them about the way this thing has turned out. I think that the comments following the findings, considering how many people in this country feel, the comments of Zimmerman's legal team, different members of his legal team, are just outrageous and unacceptable, coming from people who are, you know, under court. I mean, they're part of the court system. They certainly shouldn't be making the kind of, they almost sound like it's retribution, as if they are, you know, they're cheering the fact that, I mean, obviously they won the case. There's something there to be happy about if you are his defense team. But there's a larger issue, and that is the country's feeling about this entire situation, which they can't be oblivious to. They've been deeply involved in this case since the beginning, and it's hard for me to imagine that they can't see where many people in this country are, where Trayvon Martin's family might be about this case. And we are talking about a dead, you know, teenager, someone who died at the hands of their client. You would think that they would be a little more sensitive to the verdict, I mean, and to the results of the verdict that many people are going to react to.
Eric Vaughn is our guest, and we're going to welcome phone calls. I would imagine we'll have more than a few because many of us have watched this trial so closely, and the issues aren't over. The issues that were brought to mind and to consciousness, there's also a huge historical perspective here as well. So we're talking about the verdict in the George Zimmerman trial. Eric Vaughn is our guest this hour. Eric has been a journalist in Milwaukee for a long, long time and was a treasured morning host on WMCS until that station recently changed formats. We're delighted to have his thoughtful voice with us as we talk about the verdict here. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to leave comments there, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We start our calls with Maddie in Waupaca. Hi, Maddie.
Hi. I feel this case is very frightening to all minorities, but also even beyond minorities to even white people. You know, a guy who thinks of himself as a vigilante can follow somebody with their car, get out of their car, pursue that person, and physically attack them, and then when they start losing the fight, pull out their concealed gun and shoot them to death and get away with it.
Would you describe it as close to, if not, is vigilanteism, Eric?
Oh, I think it is. I think that I think the real problem is the stand your ground law, and here in Wisconsin, the Castle Law, which essentially sanctions people taking the law into their own hands in the most violent ways. I mean, we know that if nothing else happened on that night, that we can be certain of. The one thing we can be certain of is that he was advised by the police dispatcher to end his pursuit of Trayvon Martin. He ignored that and went on, and this altercation ensued. And again, nobody knows exactly what happened except for George Zimmerman, or at least no one can say except for George Zimmerman. And I think, to the caller's point, that we all have something to fear. It doesn't matter what race you are. It doesn't matter, you know, your age or anything else. We all have something to fear when people can walk freely with guns and use them with the law at their backs saying it's okay to defend yourself, you know, to the death.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing that can really be done about it. I agree with her fully.
Thanks, Maddie, very much for your call. Effie in Appleton, hi.
Hello?
Hi, Effie.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. You know, I'm heartbroken. Actually, I'm heartbroken for our great country. I would be so frightened to have teenagers now. We don't understand them. We don't understand their culture, their music, and their the role models that the kids have in, you know, in the music. It really scares people. And I would, again, if luckily my son is grown up man now, but if he was a teenager at this point, I would be really scared, not just for the African-American kids or Mexican-American kids or Native American children, but all of them.
Eric.
I'm sorry, Kathleen, I didn't hear you.
Oh, yeah. No, I just said your name.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I, you know, no one is safe. And I think when we have legislators who push laws like the Stand Your Ground law, again, you know, one of the things that was brought up to me last week, I was having a conversation with some friends, and someone said, you know, well, who really had the right to stand their ground in that case? I mean, what ground was George Zimmerman protecting? What ground, you know, what ground did Trayvon Martin have to stand on? I think this whole idea of protecting yourself and protecting your property has gone too far. I liken this to the case out in Slinger where the young boy was killed on the front porch.
Yes.
You know, people want to carry this thing to an extreme. Where are the days when we could just talk to people about things, or we could just stay in our houses, or we could go the other way when danger threatened us?
Mm-hmm.
If that's what we really are afraid of, I would think, or at least I am, just as concerned about pulling the trigger, possibly ending someone's life, as I am having the trigger pulled on me.
Effie, thanks so much for your call. Sherry in Wausau, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was very shocked by the verdict. As far as I was concerned, when the authorities told George Zimmerman not to leave his truck, the minute he left his truck and went after Trayvon, he was the aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
And the young woman who was talking to him on the phone heard him say, get off me, get off me. And the fact that he showed no remorse for taking the life of a 17-year-old, he sat there looking arrogant and... I can't believe that they didn't have a black person on the jury. I was just shocked that they wouldn't give him at least manslaughter. I mean, he didn't even try to wound him.
You know, Kathleen, I think what's happened to me, and I'm really, this saddens me as much as anything else in this country right now, is that nothing shocks me anymore. I've been talking with my wife about this, and she keeps talking about how saddened she is by this verdict, and I've heard a number of people, as the caller just suggested, that they are shocked or surprised. I guess after 25 years, almost 30 years of doing the kind of work that you and I do, and you've seen so many cases, you've heard so many situations, and unfortunately, those involving African Americans, we seem to come up on the short end of the stick most often in those situations. You kind of lose your sense of shock and awe over situations like this. I'm saddened by it. I'm disappointed in that George Zimmerman didn't or wasn't convicted of this crime. I'm also, as the caller suggested, George Zimmerman sat there looking smug, and I'm really concerned about the attitude of his defense team, the kinds of things that they've been saying since the verdict was rendered, the kinds of things that his family members, his brother in particular, has said on a recent television interview, and the idea that they are now going to sue NBC because they edited a tape, and obviously that was poor journalism on the part of those folks. But, you know, the big case here is the fact that, as the caller suggested, said, there's a 17-year-old boy who died.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody close to George Zimmerman seems to feel bad about that.
I'm wondering if, I've heard some legal experts, I'm sure you have as well, Eric, who said, given the nature of the stand your ground, the self-defense possibilities in the state of Florida, it's all pretty lenient. Do you think that it would have been very difficult, or the charges somehow weren't appropriate and couldn't deal with the fact that a 17-year-old died here, that it became something else, and so we could never look at what the essence of this was? We were wrapped in stand your ground, self-defense, George Zimmerman being the only person alive who really knew what happened, and it would have been hard for a jury to have gone another way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, not being, I even watched some of this the other day on Court TV or whatever channel it was, and when what seemed to me to be some of the critical points during the trial were made, those points were silenced on television. So I think one of the unfortunate realities of this case is that there are a lot of emotions tied to it, and those of us on the outside of the courtroom don't have access to all of the
right
evidence and all of the information. So it's hard to say what the jurors based their findings on. But I think that, you know, with the emotion that most of us are working from on this case, we're saying, here's a young boy, got into an altercation with, you know, a grown man, may or may not have been getting the best of it, and he was shot and killed. And in most cases, I think the general public believes that somebody ought to pay for that. And in this case, nobody's paying for it as people see it. And as a result, you have the kind of unrest, not only in terms of people taken to the streets, but, you know, you and I talking about it, the newspapers are writing about it, and it'll go on for some time. The unfortunate thing is that since the really unfortunate part of this is that since the Trayvon Martin shooting, there have been 11 other shootings very similar, none receiving the kind of notoriety that the Trayvon Martin case has. But there have been 11 other cases similar to Trayvon Martin, not necessarily with African-American boys and grown men, but shooting incidents where, you know, these kinds of laws, these kinds of situations have been, you know, have been part of the determining factor. Mm-hmm. And I think we do need to start looking at what these laws are doing in the country, what the attitude in this country. You know, there were suspicions early on, and it seemed that the conversation kind of died down as this thing grew older. But there were suspicions early on that, you know, some of the gun advocacy movement folks were behind the Zimmerman defense, that there was no way that he could have paid for the legal team that he was able to secure for his for his trial. That this was as much about the stand your ground law being defended as it was George Zimmerman's, you know, freedom being defended.
Yeah. More phone calls momentarily. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our phone number, phones are available to you. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're devoting the first part of All Things Political this Monday to the George Zimmerman trial because it's obviously something that brings to mind just all kinds of very important issues in this country. So Eric Vaughn is joining us. Eric is a longtime Milwaukee journalist, former talk show host on Milwaukee's WMCS, and he is here getting his response to the verdict. And we're listening to you as well. We'll take more phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 3 o'clock this afternoon on Central Time, Rob Ferret and Veronica Rickert will talk about the verdict in the case of George Zimmerman. Also begin, as you heard, a week-long series looking at the severity of the heroin problem in Wisconsin. Eric Vaughn is with us for a little while longer, and we're talking about the verdict in the George Zimmerman trial. Our number is 800-486-8655. Jean in Madison is next. Hi, Jean.
Hello. I feel really terrible about this whole thing, too, and I guess this was just a comment to agree with your guest about the insensitivity of the defense team. When they were the attorney was being asked whether Mr. Zimmerman would receive the gun back and continue to carry a gun, and he said yes to both of those and said that he thought his client probably felt that if he hadn't had the gun, that his life would have been in danger. But that's really seems to me insulting, that because I don't think if he didn't have the loaded gun with him that he would have even started the whole thing. So, you know, I think that was a huge part of the problem. That's just a comment. Thanks,
Jean. Thank you. Eric?
I agree with her. Jean, there are a lot of people who share these sentiments that Jean has expressed, that not only George Zimmerman, but many of the people who have found, you know, security in having a weapon these days would not feel so bold and so emboldened to step in front and step up on some of the people they choose to. And I'm not talking about just good people, as some people like to consider themselves. Even some of the criminals who are out here wouldn't commit the crimes that they're committing if they didn't have access to the guns that they do. So, you know, I've been saying for a long time that our problem in this society today is really access to weapons as much as it is the people who are committing the crimes. They like to talk about people commit crimes, not guns, and that's true. But if people didn't have the guns, how many of these crimes would we be able to kind of eliminate or never even have a discussion about because they don't take place?
Mm. Thank you very much for the call. The senior pastor at Ebenezer Baptist Church yesterday talked about how difficult this month was, a month after the Supreme Court voting 5-4 to void the provision of the Voting Rights Act. And then this trial, I quote, "The last few weeks have been pivotal to the consciousness of Black America. Black men have been stigmatized." Do those two decisions sort of put that up a notch, or has it always been thus?
You know, I think that these recent decisions and some of the other things that have happened in recent weeks have all highlighted the need for us to be more conscious and aware of our surroundings, of what's happening politically. This hour of your show is dedicated typically to political issues. We need to have more of that kind of conversation, more of that kind of vision, because part of the problem is we're not aware politically as we should be, particularly in the Black community. And things are happening politically. Supreme Court decision was just one of those many things. Again, as I said earlier, I think the attitude that we're seeing expressed by the Zimmerman team and others who are gleeful over the fact that George Zimmerman, quote, got away with this, stems from the fact that they believe that for far too long, African-Americans had some great advantage in this country. Mm-hmm. And they're leveling the playing field now. They're evening the score with many things that are happening. And unfortunately, we've been able to watch as members of Congress have been elected, members of the Senate have been elected, who, in my opinion, don't really share the true values of America, whatever they may be now. It seems to be a bit skewed, but those that we thought America stood for aren't being defended effectively by our current congressional leadership. And so we have laws being enacted. We have attitudes being expressed by members of Congress. But I think they probably do reflect some in the country, but I don't think they reflect the majority. So we have these activities taking place in the country, which I think are really upending many of the advancements made creating a more civilized society than we had during the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and maybe earlier than that.
Let's go to Duane next in Wausau. Hi, Duane.
Oh, hi. How you doing? Great discussion. Obviously, everybody feels bad about what happened to Trayvon Martin. To kind of break it down, in my opinion, George Zimmerman was a man with a gun going out looking for trouble. You know, that's kind of what he was doing. He made this trouble for himself. He killed a man. And I'd be disappointed, too. I mean, I hate to bring in, you know, the jury was, what, 6 women and 5 were white?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have been real happy. Why? That didn't seem fair to me. How come his attorney accepted all, you know, 5 out of 6 white Caucasian, you know? And I wouldn't want to be in George Zimmerman's shoes. He's believe me, he'll be punished. Just living his life, I would not want that. And he's going to be like Casey Anthony and shunned, I think, you know.
Well, they're worried now. I mean, his attorney talks about him needing his gun more than ever now. I don't think that anybody is going to look to do him any harm because I just don't think that's the way people operate in most cases. But his own conscience, as you suggest, may eat him alive more quickly than anything that anyone else might do to him.
Mm-hmm. What about the jury? When it comes to it brings to mind the question, if indeed we have all these racial issues in this country, and I must say that every time things like this happen and you hear from African-American parents who talk about the warnings they have to give their children when they get their driver's licenses and what they should be saying to police and what neighborhoods they should be careful of, and it just is so sad that those conversations take place. And I would imagine today they're taking place in greater numbers than they already have taken place. Does it mean that we need to make sure that we hear that perspective when we're choosing juries?
You know, I think we should. I don't think we ever will, because just as, you know, these jury members and actually the lawyers on both sides were warned in this case again by the judge against bringing up racial issues, you know, making this a matter of race during the trial, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous, but that's the judge's, you know, prerogative. But Kathleen, to be honest with you, I don't think that for most African-American parents and their children, this case is frustrating, it's angering, but I think for most of us, we've seen so much of this all of our lives. It doesn't surprise us. I think the warnings that young men are given, that young girls are given, you know, when you start to drive, you know, when you get 16, when you turn 16 and you get the family car, you know, right up with driving safely, you're also warned against where to drive, not only because, you know, of people in your neighborhood who might harm you, but because of very police officers who you think are there to protect you. Those warnings that go out every day to kids and from their parents in the Black community, and I'm sure in the Latino community, and maybe even in some white communities, because people have been, leery of police officers, leery of law enforcement, particularly in the Black community, for a long time. And it doesn't matter that the officers might be Black or white or whatever they might be. It's just this fear of law enforcement that exists in the Black community. It's a reality. And I think all we have to do is look back through history and see the kinds of things that have happened day in, day out in Black communities across the country, the unfortunate situations that occur between police officers and citizens, particularly young men, young Black men. And I think any cautions that parents might give are justified. And so when these kinds of things happen, when these situations happen like they do in, like they did in Florida, where it was beyond the police department, this was about the criminal justice system, where, again, there's as much skepticism about how things will turn out when we are in front of juries, when we are in front of judges, as we are when we are in front of police officers. I don't think that most parents are surprised. We're angry, we're frustrated, we're scared for our children, but we know the kinds of situations that can present themselves when our children are out and they are confronted by law enforcement.
Let's go to Connie in Portage. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I just tuned in about 15 minutes ago. I'm on the road, and I was curious to hear if anybody had said anything about Zimmerman's head being so bashed in at the back and at the front. I'm a nurse. He could have had severe brain damage. I mean, he was bleeding front and back. Has anybody thought about that?
Well, he was in a fight. I think they thought about it, and I think there was even some question as to how much damage was done to George Zimmerman from the time that he was taken into the police station the night of the incident. They've been talking about that, but at one point there was some suggestion that it wasn't as bad as he had suggested it was, or that then they showed photographs. Were you convinced that the damage was as severe as his attorneys, at least in the court appearance, made it out to be?
Connie?
Yes.
Did you hear what Eric
said? But I can't hear him, so I turned my radio so I could hear his response. I cannot hear him at all.
Oh. Were you as concerned as his defense attorneys seemed to be that the damage that he suffered was quite extensive?
Well, it could have been, being a nurse. I mean, I looked at that and I thought, okay, I couldn't tell, I didn't hear about an autopsy or anything, but I didn't know if the boy was bleeding all over besides the gunshot, or if this was, you know, it was just curious to me that nobody seemed to care about the damage he suffered to his head, front and back.
Well, I think Connie may have missed that part of the report, because there was considerable discussion about the injury sustained by George Zimmerman early on. The question, as I said, the question was how severe the injury was, how extensive the injury was. And I don't know that they ever really concluded that the injury was as severe as his attorney suggested it was, or that he had suggested it was at the outset of the case.
Thank you, Connie, so much for your call. And one more call for you, Eric, and then we'll let you go. We just have tons of interest in this. Kelly in River Falls. Hi.
Good afternoon. I'd first start out by saying I don't think that the defense team invoked the stand your ground law, and so I think it wouldn't have mattered. I think George Zimmerman would have done what he did, whether that law was in effect or not. But I think that the defense team, when they said something like, well, I think the justice system abused George Zimmerman, that just kind of drives me nuts. A kid was dead, yet he wasn't even supposed to be hauled in a courtroom, according to his defense people. But then in the same token, I did a lot of looking on the Internet, and I saw a lot of obscene tweets about revenge against white boys. And I think that just that's beyond the pale just as much as what the defense team was talking about. But finally, I'd say, you know, a few years back, we had a famous beer summit where our fearless leader had a chance to take on race and keep on the bully pulpit about it. And here was a grown man who was accosted by police in his own home. And yet here we are in 2013 looking at this garbage again. When is this subject going to be dealt with in America?
Eric.
I don't think it ever will be, not honestly. I'm not sure that we're not dealing with it now as effectively as we can. I don't know what else you can do except for talk about things in the aftermath. That's the unfortunate reality of it. Nobody wants to talk about race at any time, but particularly not when, you know, we have a lot of discussions about it after situations like this, but I don't know that we ever come to any real solutions or conclusions. I don't know if there are any.
Hmm. Really. Eric, thank you very, very much for being with us.
Kathleen, thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Eric Vaughn, our guest this most of the hour, and we thank him. He, for a long time, was a morning talk show host for WMCS in Milwaukee. Station recently changed format. He's been a journalist for many years and is currently... he and his wife have a major initiative, Brain, Brawn, and Body. It's a website, and they're doing speeches dedicated to the health and wellness of African-American men. We're going to continue with all things political. There have been some political statements made as a result of the Trayvon Martin, the George Zimmerman trial, and we'll be talking about that. And we'll look at a few other subjects that are in the news, and there are many. It's a busy political time. It's just that this Zimmerman verdict has been front and center in many people's minds, so we thought we would concentrate a good chunk of this hour on that. We continue our conversation with another guest from Mother Jones, actually, who has a lot to say about this trial and about all kinds of other issues on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program this Monday, British neurologist Oliver Sacks will join us. He recently turned 80, and a piece that he wrote in the New York Times caught our attention. So we're going to be talking about turning 80, and we'll, of course, branch into other subjects that he has explored so beautifully and rivetingly. We continue with all things political. Now, Tim Murphy is joining us. Tim is a reporter in Mother Jones, D.C. Bureau. He logged 22,000 miles last year while blogging about his cross-country trip for Mother Jones. His writing has been featured in Slate and the Washington Monthly, and he's tweets all the time as well. So we'll talk with him about some of the other political news, but still a couple more questions on the George Zimmerman trial. Tim, thank you very much for being with us. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Tell me, Tim, what do you think will be the outcome, the political outcome of the Justice Department saying that they are investigating this? Is all of this going to become very political, sort of a conservative citing one side of this issue and liberals citing the other and legislators falling suit, or will this fall by the wayside? What do you think?
Well, I think it's already sort of that we've already sort of seen the political outcome on this pretty much as soon as the case, you know, caught the nation's eye last spring, which is that almost immediately you got a polarization along party lines with folks defending George Zimmerman, folks calling for justice for Trayvon Martin. So I don't think we're going to see much more polarization on that issue just because we're kind of about as far as we can get. I think the political ramifications sort of hinge on how far, you know, the Department of Justice is willing to take this. You have Eric Holder saying today that, you know, the DOJ is going to continue to investigate this and see if there is some sort of civil rights case. You know, as you recall, that's what the federal government did in the aftermath of the Rodney King acquittals back in the early 1990s. So if that really takes off, then obviously this story is going to continue to bear with us. Otherwise, I think this case might fall in line with, you know, sort of previous cases like, you know, the Oscar Grant shooting in Oakland a few years back,
mm-hmm.
where it, you know, catches everyone's attention and to particular communities really stands out, but doesn't lead to any sort of real change.
Mm. Well, what about those particular communities? Because there are particular communities who have been deeply affected by this. Will there be pressure brought to bear that the Justice Department simply can't ignore that will press them forward on investigating this?
Yeah, I think there will be. I mean, I think there's a difference, you know, between the current Obama Justice Department and a lot of its predecessors in terms of how actively they pursue these kinds of civil rights investigations. So I think there is some possibility that, you know, they're going to be more active on this than you would have previously seen. But at the same time, in the aftermath of the Trayvon Martin shooting, you had a big push, you know, especially among, you know, kind of progressives and that kind of thing, to revisit these stand your ground laws that allow someone to, you know, pull out a gun and shoot someone without having an obligation to step back. And that, you know, nothing really came of that. No states have actually revisited those laws, despite the loud calls to do so.
And so you don't think that the states will be revisiting after this verdict either?
No, because I think largely, you know, those states have already kind of, you know, sorted that out among themselves. You know, states that have stand your ground laws do so because they're politically popular. And the places for the largest push to revisit them, you know, is going to be in states that don't have those laws to begin with.
Right. What do you think, before we move to other subjects here, what do you think it is about this particular case? Eric Vaughn, our previous guest, was talking about how there have been other shootings recently. What is it about the Trayvon Martin case that has every cable channel doing it nonstop, everybody writing about this, everybody taking this very seriously?
Well, I think it's just the pretty, you know, two of the most, you know, powerful, you know, currents in, you know, the American legal system. You have race and you have gun laws. And in this case, you know, they're just kind of intersected. You have the story, you know, of an unarmed teenager with Skittles, and you have this, you know, neighborhood watch leader, and everything, you know, you just kind of adds this confluence of details, combined with kind of the reluctance of law enforcement to even kind of consider investigating it in the early going. So you just have kind of all these different things at play.
Yeah. All right, moving on to some of the other political things, and there's a lot certainly going on in political areas. What do you think about any chance now of a comprehensive immigration bill? Is that just gone?
You know, you never say never on these kinds of things. It's certainly not looking as good as it did a month ago or even 2 or 3 weeks ago. The most recent push or most recent pushback from House Republicans is now sort of tied to the Obama administration's delay of the implementation of some of the Affordable Care Act. And so the argument that Republicans are making is, if we can't take them seriously on health care, how can we take them at their word on immigration? Which, you know, can be kind of disingenuous, but that's the new push that they're making on it. Almost as if they're looking for a reason to not get behind this.
So what would, if we were never going to say never, we wouldn't say never because what might happen?
Ultimately, Republicans might look into the future and decide that they really don't want to continue alienating, you know, tens of millions of American voters for kind of arbitrary reasons. I think, you know, one area for optimism, for instance, would be, you know, a path to citizenship for young undocumented immigrants. So, you know, the original version would, you know, provide for some sort of path to citizenship for all of these undocumented folks, provided they, you know, take the proper steps. House Republicans are sort of conceding, you know, Eric Cantor most notably, conceding that, you know, maybe these kids who are here who were brought over when they were 2 years old, maybe they should have a path to citizenship. And that's not meeting, you know, Democrats all the way, but it is a step from where they were 2 years ago.
The farm bill, that, of course, was highly contentious as well. The food stamp program being taken out of the farm bill. What's the future of food stamps? Surely people are not abandoning that program, are they?
You know, a lot of folks are. A lot of folks would like to see food stamps totally axed. And obviously Democrats are going to, you know, pull out all the stops to get funding for that somehow. But, you know, just the fact that a lot of these, you know, all of these, you know, House Republicans were willing to, you know, cast this vote that would just strip, you know, funding for this pretty long-standing program, I think, you know, speaks to the fact that they're not really worried about the political consequences for that.
You wrote an interesting piece. You read a lot of interesting pieces, but this caught my attention this morning, that conservatives, the anti-Hillary voices, the people on the other side, are the ones who are really taking in a lot of money, thinking that she will probably be the candidate, and there is money to be made by saying she's going to be the candidate. Aren't you worried about this?
Yeah, and actually that was my colleague Andy Kroll. He had a very good story on just how Hillary Clinton has emerged. They're sort of reemerged as this cash cow for all of these different conservative causes in a way that, you know, these figures kind of cycle in and out. In the 1990s, it would have been the Clintons again. I think what you're starting to see is sort of the return of the, you know, conservatives, you know, animosity toward the Clintons and sort of, you know, the fact that they're being used as, you know, these political, you know, money raisers is part of that.
Mm-hmm. I do want to give our audience our phone number if you want to join us in the minutes that remain. We'd like to hear from you on all things political, the issues we brought up with Tim or anything beyond. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. There are always a lot of polls, but the latest poll shows that the president's favorability ratings are not very good. Why is that?
You know, for a number of reasons, I think he's still taking a lot of hits from some of the scandals that seemed to envelop the administration earlier this year. And, you know, the fact that some of these scandals really haven't been borne out by the facts hasn't really done much to bring those approval ratings back up. I think the IRS scandal, for instance, is one that was really damaging to the Obama administration at the time, and everybody was paying a lot of attention to it. The fact that that turned out to be pretty much, you know, much ado about nothing hasn't, you know, had any sort of corresponding bounce.
Hmm. And this also says that he gets very high marks for honesty and also for leadership, but really some low marks now on foreign policy.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, any time there's sort of unrest, you know, in a pretty high-profile way, you know, in an important region, like, you know, what's going on in Egypt right now, you know, barring some sort of, you know, highly popular military intervention, that's always going to kind of be a drag on what the president's doing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to have all these, you know, different folks, even a lot of folks who might otherwise agree with the president on domestic issues are going to come kind of, you know, come out of the woodwork there. And, you know, I think we're seeing a little bit of that.
What have you seen any polls or thoughts on the part of the American people as to whether or not it's a good idea to completely withdraw from Afghanistan next year?
You know, I haven't seen anything recently. I mean, I think generally there's pretty broad support for, you know, some sort of, you know, gradual withdrawal and leaving. And I think you're starting to see, you know, that's no longer kind of a one-party issue. That's really kind of a growing, you know, even somebody like Rick Perry says that we should probably get out of Afghanistan. So I think it's sort of the emerging consensus. But I don't know, you know, in terms of time frames or anything like that, where folks stand.
Let's go to Rick in La Crusa. Hi, Rick.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Rick. Go right ahead.
I'm sorry. To your guest who said conservatives want to do away with the food stamp program, my experience is talking to a lot of people is the food stamp program has about quadrupled in the last 10 years, and many of us would like to see reductions in that program or zero growth or something else. We don't believe that it should be ended tomorrow. I mean, that's a little harsh for her to say that.
Tim.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would see a number of conservative lawmakers who really don't, you know, support food stamps, or they think that food stamps are sort of, you know, keeping people in poverty. It's sort of the argument that you get a lot. I think in terms of the overall increase in food stamps, a lot of that does have to do with the impact of the Great Recession, which all of a sudden thrust, you know, millions of Americans into kind of the eligibility, you know, for food stamps because all of a sudden their income had dropped or they're, you know, long-term unemployed or something like that. So I don't think, you know, it's as much a push to give food stamps to more and more people so much as it's just more and more people are eligible for that.
Mm. And finally, we're short of time. What are the big things of the week? What are you looking toward?
Well, it's, you know, again, we're still looking at immigration. We're still looking at, you know, the fallout from the Zimmerman case, and I guess specifically what can happen from here. My colleague Lauren Williams had a really good piece on this, just sort of looking at, you know, the different options going forward on that in terms of a Department of Justice case or in terms of a civil lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tim, very much.
Thank you.
Tim Murphy, our guest for All Things Political. We also, of course, thank Eric Vaughn for being with us talking about the Zimmerman not guilty verdict reached on Saturday. All Things Political was a regular feature of our show when we were at 9 to 11, and we thought we would continue it. It is a regular feature of our new time slot, 1 to 3, and you will hear it on Monday afternoons, All Things Political. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks, everybody, for your calls and for listening and staying tuned. Tomorrow we will be covering the food stamp issue with Timothy Smeeting, a UW-Madison professor of public policy who studies poverty. So we'll look at the whole history and what the future of the food stamp program may be. News is coming up momentarily. Please stay tuned. Oliver Sacks will be with us. Should be a rip-roaring good hour following the news.